And like we did last week, for everybody that's watching at home, please get something to write on and something to write with. Get some paper and a pen. For all of you, and I'm going to be watching you very closely, all of you in the room, if you don't have paper with you, please get out your phone and go to the Notes app and prepare to write some things down for you to think about and concentrate on this week. And there'll be several things that I'm going to ask you to make a special note of in the course of our message. 1 Samuel 17, verse 26. David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" They repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, "This is what will be done for the man who kills him." When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked him, "Why have you come down here, and with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle." "Now what have I done?" said David. "Can I even speak?" He then turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter, and the man brought him... And the man answered him as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." What an awesome physical specimen Goliath must have been. If you look a little earlier up in chapter 17, it says he was 6 cubits and a span tall. Had to look that one up. 10 feet tall, this guy. 10 feet. He was a descendant of the Canaanite giants who had been living in the great walled cities on top of the mountains that when God's people first came in and sent the spies in to spy out the promised land, they came back and said, "No way." Said there's giants that live in that land. They said they are so big that beside them we feel like grasshoppers, is how they put it. No way we can take that land. This dude is a descendant of those people. And it's really kind of hard to grasp the bulk of him. He could stand flat-footed right here, right now, and reach up and touch that ceiling without even having to reach to do it. He glistened in the sun when they looked down in the valley at him. He was covered head to toe in polished bronze armor. Did a little bit of research on the obscure weights that it lists here in 1 Samuel 17. It says that his coat weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze, and that the tip of his spear was 600 shekels of iron. What that tells us? His coat weighed 125 pounds. Of bronze. The tip of his spear was 15 pounds of iron. And every day, day after day, until day after day became week after week, for 40 consecutive days, the Philistines had lined up their army on the ridge on this side, and the army of God, the army of Israel, lined up on the other ridge with a deep valley in between them. And every day the Philistines would send this 10-foot hulk down into the valley to scream back up at God's people. He'd look up at God's army and he'd say, "Send me a champion to fight for you. And if I beat your champion, then the agreement will be that Israel will be our slaves. But if he beats me, you will rule over the Philistines." And day after day, he taunted, he threatened, he cursed, he swore, he defied, and he shamed the army of God. Day after day, while all that was going on, the army of God would get all lined up and all dressed up. And they would have their armor and they would have their weapons. And it said they would get into battle lines and formation to fight. And they did nothing all day long but stand there and shake in fear of that one man down in the valley. Verse 20 says, they formed battle lines. They shouted war cries. And they made all the appropriate motions. Here's the first thing to write down. Israel did everything an army should do except go fight the battle. Now, I'm telling you, when I get to that point in the story, I have to fight the urge to feel a good solid ripple of self-righteous indignation. Oh, please, you cowardly, faithless soldiers of Israel. I love to look down my nose at the faithless Israelites. But then when I return to sanity, two things keep me from going there. First of all, I like to picture me as the David in this story. Running down the hill to the valley to take on the giant. But I know me. And I know that if I was standing there as just old John, looking down at a 10-foot armor-plated, spear-chunking, sword-wielding people killer, I could see me very easily every day looking up and down the road to see all those other guys that are much better equipped for this battle than I am. I can see me quietly standing on the ridge hoping nobody would notice me. The second thing that keeps me from self-righteous indignation when I read this story is I don't have to imagine what I would do. Because God has given me countless battles that scared me, and I've spent most of my life lining up and shouting battle cries while the battle goes unfought. You know what I'm talking about? Now, I'm telling you what, half our crowd is not in the room tonight. The other half is going to have to make up for them. And quite frankly, the half that's not in the room tonight are the noisy half. Amen. Thank you. I'm going to need some response while I preach, or we're just going to give this thing up. And you really do want to hear this, I think. There was a farmer that had acres and acres and acres, had a vast farm full of wheat. And so as the harvest time was approaching, he had a lot of money, and so he ordered up and went and bought the finest harvesting machine money could buy, the very best to be had, spent a fortune for it, and then hired 4 men to go bring in the harvest with this incredible machine he had bought. And then he went off on business and said, "Harvest my crop." Well, the first thing they did, they looked at this, you know, million-dollar, multi-million-dollar piece of machinery, and they said it would be tragic if something happened to this incredible investment that our boss has made. And they said, so, first thing that's really critical is to protect that. And they built a wonderful climate-controlled barn to keep it in. And then they all voted on the jobs each one of them would take. One of them stepped up and said, "I'll volunteer to chair the barn committee because that is a lavish structure we built to protect this piece of equipment, and it would be so wrong to let it rot and fall apart. So I'll make sure that barn is in ship shape all the time." And another one stepped up and said, Well, I'm going to make sure that it looks as good as it deserves, and so I'm going to clean it and polish it regularly and wax it once a week. Another one stepped up and says, I'm a mechanic. I have some mechanical skills, and I'll make sure that we keep that machine always in perfect running order. And another one said, I have some skills at coordinating and overseeing, and I'm going to make sure that all of us stay on target, and I'll make sure that we have a schedule for all of us and that we don't trip over each other trying to do the same thing. So the boss comes back to town, and the mechanic is out test driving the machine. And the cleaner polisher dude went with him to make sure that he didn't get it dirty. And the barn maintenance guy is working on the thermostat on their climate control. And the organizer is putting together tomorrow's work schedule. And the wheat had rotted in the field. That's a whole lot of my story right there. Lots and lots of getting ready. How often do we spend our lives up to our necks getting ready and preparing, while the thing that we're preparing to do goes undone? Israel got all dressed up. Israel kept their weapons all ready and shiny. Israel lined up in battle formation and shouted some very impressive war cries. Write this down. While the enemy was not only undefeated, they were unchallenged, untouched. So after 40 days and 40 nights of constant humiliation and abuse, you can imagine that the spirits of the Israelite army sank to nothing. And in their very darkest hour, God sent a kid. God sent David to get the job done. Remember, as we were looking at David last week, and how when Samuel came and said, I want to meet your sons, their daddy, Jesse, lined up all these strapping, strong, tall, good-looking guys. And he went down the row, and God said, not that one, not that one, not that one. Not. And he got to the end of the row, and finally Samuel says, is this it? And Jesse said, well, yeah, we got a kid. We got a little boy. He's out in the field watching my sheep, but surely you didn't come to look at him. This happened immediately on the heels of all that. I'm not a great Old Testament scholar, but those who are estimate he was probably 13 or 14 years old. He was a middle school kid. And the reason he was not there already is he was a kid. He was not qualified to serve in the army. He was a child. He wasn't in the military because he was not allowed to be. Now, Jesse, their daddy, had sent the three oldest sons, the big strapping boys, to be in Saul's army. They were already there. And so Jesse sends David, the kid at home, with some food and supplies for his brothers out on the battlefield and to see how they're doing. So David gets there and he drops off all the supplies for his brothers with a supply officer, it says. And then he went to go find his brothers. And he found them and they greeted each other and they were talking. And suddenly, right in the middle of his reunion with his three big brothers, this big old hulking Philistine comes lumbering down that side of the hill into the valley and begins to scream obscenities and ridicule at Jehovah God and his people. David stood there in stunned disbelief as thousands of heavily armed soldiers in the army of God scamper away in terror. Verse 26 contains one of the greatest lines in the entire Old Testament. So I want you to write it down. It's great. David looks at all of that and he turns back to his brothers and he said, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine who would defy the army of the living God?" Now his brothers didn't answer. They were furious. They said, "Shut up, kid. You're just a stupid child. You're not even supposed to be here. How about those few sheep that are your responsibility? Why don't you go home and take care of that?" And so he turned from his brothers and he asked the next guy and the next guy and the next guy until finally he worked his way up and King Saul heard there was this kid running around asking the same question of everybody, and King Saul brought him in. And David said, "Sir, this man who has caused all that grief needs to be stopped." And then he said the craziest thing for a middle school kid. "I, your servant, will fight that Philistine." Don't you know? Don't you know that Saul and everybody around him wanted to chuckle at that point? Legions of the best soldiers among God's people, legions, thousands of them are all running away from that big dude down there in the valley. And there's a kid not old enough to shave. And he said, "You see that 10-foot idiot down there that's cursing our God? That bronze-plated Philistine savage?" Reminds me of the old Looney Tunes, Foghorn Leghorn. Remember Foghorn Leghorn? And there's this chicken hawk. Remember? This little chicken hawk that's this big, and the chicken is this big. And he's forever trying to grab that chicken by the tail and take him home for dinner. It's a scene exactly like that. David said, "Well, let me give you a little bit of my resume, Your Majesty." He said, "I'm a shepherd back home for my daddy's sheep. And when a bear or a lion comes in to hurt my daddy's sheep, I hit them. When a lion comes after one of the sheep, I hit him. And if one of them comes after me, I grab them by the beard with one hand and hit them with the other." Verse 36. He said, "That's exactly what I'm going to do to this uncircumcised Philistine. I'm going to whoop him." Verse 37. He said, "The Lord has delivered me from the paw of the lion and the bear, and he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." All of this within earshot of an entire group. And that entire group, here's the question. Here's the problem. What they have forgotten is the God factor. Heard a story years ago about a little boy in the backyard of their house, and there was this giant log that he wanted to use for a fort or something he was building on the other side of the yard. Great big log. Little bitty boy, and he's in the backyard, and he is trying to move that big log from this side of the yard to the other, and he's pushing, and he's shoving, and he's red in the face, and he's breaking out in a sweat, and he's not budging that log. So his daddy sees it through the window and comes outside, and he stands there by the boy and says, "What are you doing, son?" He said, "I'm trying to move that log over there." And the daddy says, "Well, use all of your strength." And the boy takes a deep breath, and red in the face, dripping sweat, he throws his whole body into boot, doesn't budge. And the daddy says, "Son, use all of your strength." And the boy looks back up more than a little frustrated. He said, "Daddy, you can see I'm using all the strength I've got." And the daddy says, "No, you're not." He said, "I'm standing right here. And if you ask me, I'll help you. And until you ask me, you are not using all of your strength. So write this down. That's the God factor. David understood what nobody else did. David never dreamed for a heartbeat that there was anything about David that could take on personally a 10-foot, armed-to-the-teeth giant. But this is what to write. He said, "The Lord will deliver me from the hands of this Philistine because I serve a living God." Amen. David never says, "I'll do it." He said, "The Lord will deliver me. I serve a living God." There are preachers all over the Metroplex, preachers that will stand up in churches all over our area this weekend who will tell you with some real confidence that this story is not actually true. That it's a moral fable passed down by generations of Jews to encourage and to help understand the mightiness of God. But obviously, a kid did not actually kill a giant that day. Well, call me old-fashioned or out of step or naive or simplistic. I've been called a whole lot worse than any of those, by the way. But I honestly believe every single word exactly as we just read it. I believe there was David. I believe there was Saul. I believe there was Goliath. And I believe that that story happened in real life exactly like God wrote it down for us. I'll tell you something else I believe, and write this down. Our God is not dead. Our God is not a retired patriarch. His son is not a retired itinerant traveling preacher. His spirit is not a retired author of a really good book of moralizing fables. The difference between the defeated and the victorious is the victorious understand that we cannot move mountains. And that's truth. We cannot move mountains. But as we say in the recovery circles that I sit in several times every week, I have come to believe that there is a power greater than myself that can. Now, he wants me to pick up a shovel as I face that mountain and start digging on it. But my shovel and I are not going to move that mountain. He is. Amen? You show me the fellowship of God's people who uses as their own the strength of God. And there is nothing that hell itself can do to slow us, stop us, or defeat us. You show me a man or a woman, a child of God, who uses as their own the strength of God, and there is nothing that hell can do to slow us, stop us, or defeat us. We serve a living, always victorious, present day, 21st century God. And that's the heart of what caused dying people like us to keep living, wasn't it? We realized we had no power over anything. We came to believe that there was a power greater than ourselves who could, and we made a decision to let him do it. That's what saved my life and yours. And it will change everything when people like us stand up to whatever the Philistine is that's crossing our path today and tomorrow and say, who is this uncircumcised Philistine to defy the army of the living God? I don't need to tell you the rest of the story. You know how it went. I'm going to let Samuel tell you here in a second. But he picked up five smooth rocks, just five little rocks. Four of the rocks never left his pouch. Verse 48. As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a slingshot and a rock. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. And David ran and stood over him, and he took hold of the Philistine's sword, and he drew it from the sheath. And after he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. And when the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. Then the men of Israel and Judah surged forward with a shout and pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath and to the gates of Ekron. Their dead were strewn along the Shoreham road to Gath and Ekron. When the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistines, they plundered their camps. And David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem. And he put the Philistine's weapon in his own tent. Now I want you to write this down, please, because it's the most important thing you're going to hear all night. And Jason, I'll invite your crew back up, bud. Write this down. When God's champion was victorious, all of God's people were victorious. Did you see that? When David fought and won, the rest of the army didn't have to. The price for all was paid by one. Are you tracking me? There is a battle to be fought by all of us. We all have our own battles every single day. There's a battle to be fought by all of us. There are enemies out there that we cannot defeat. I love how Jesus gave us the solution to that. In his last words to his best buddies, in John 16, he said, in this world, you will have trouble. Don't be shocked when you have a bad day. When Jesus said, I was going to have the peace that passes understanding. Well, yeah, you will. But you'll have trouble. This is the enemy's turf here. This is his home base here. It's not ours. It's his. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. He has overcome the world. Amen. What that means is God's champion fought so that I wouldn't have to. And when he won, I won. And so did you. And in all these things, said Paul, we are more than conquerors. I love Paul's next words. He said, for I am sure that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else, and all of creation will be able to defeat those who have been bought by him. Amen. If you're living a defeated life, the odds are really, really strong. You have not surrendered to the one who introduced himself as the Son of David. The Son of David. All that's left for this army, all that's left for this little outpost of an army, is to go claim an already purchased victory. The battle has already been fought. It's already been won. And we invite you, come taste that victory with us. Let's stand up and worship together.